We're at the RCB Library, yes, in Braemore Park, Churchtown, where we hold the archives of the Church of Ireland as a whole, and that includes parish records, diocesan papers, and indeed the papers and muniments of many of the Church of Ireland's cathedrals, not least St. Patrick's. The records of this cathedral go back to medieval times. The earliest document here that we hold for St. Patrick's is in fact dates from the 14th century. Unfortunately, due to the ravages of time, storms, floods, neglect, people not looking after records when they should have, particularly the tumultuous kind of conflict era of the 16th and 17th centuries in Ireland, many of the records for St. Patrick's were unfortunately lost. However, a vast array does survive. It's been in the library here since the early 90s. It facilitated the writing of an official history of the cathedral, and it's been put in order. And what we've done to celebrate the 350th anniversary of the birth of Swift, because St. Patrick's was Swift's cathedral, is we've put the detailed hand list, which guides users through that vast collection of archives, online as a resource that anybody can download and look at their convenience. But we've also highlighted some of the particular aspects of the collection that relate to Swift and his legacy. Swift was the 50th Dean of St. Patrick's. He's appointed in June 1713. And he serves for 32 years. And maybe his particular legacy, although we don't have a lot of his correspondence and his personal papers, they kind of went with him when he left. But his big legacy for the cathedral's administration was he was a great administrator. He was a reformer. And he comes in, I suppose things have calmed down in Ireland by the early 18th century, and he's, I think, trying to make good some of the losses, perhaps, of records before him. He's left a legacy of really good record keeping. He builds a room, or he orders that a room is to be set aside for the safety and ordering of the cathedral's records. He would seem to have a team of clerks who, the beautiful writing that we can see, the chapter minutes, the minutes where the dean and his chapter committee, who are responsible for the cathedral, coming together at committee and making all kinds of decisions and resolutions. The thing that we're celebrating online is this administrative reforming, keeping the records safe, that really we can thank Swift for pioneering.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, it's an unusual combination to have somebody who is so particular about keeping records and yet also a great literary genius. You know, I mean, those two don't often come together.
I think he must have had, as 50th Dean, he must have had a great sense of the of what he had inherited, the responsibilities that he had. St. Patrick's owned a great deal of property in and around the cathedral. There were leases and deeds and all kinds of administrative papers to do with that. And there's a lot of evidence of him trying to put that in order. You know, good governance. I think good governance actually goes with a sense of justice and fairness that, he's been known about in his literary works. And the pride then, the pride in the building itself. I mean, he does unusual things like he commissions the great artist Patrick Blymyres to produce these survey drawings of the cathedral, wonderful elevations. And then through the Chapter Act books, we can actually see him then organising for an ordering that repairs are to be done, you know, that locks are to be secured on the building, that areas that were maybe dirty and untidy are to be cleaned up. So all of that goes, I think, with good administration, reform, keeping the cathedral in good order.
He was also quite an outspoken critic of either people or systems in his day.
Yes, we know, in fact, there's a lovely little book, and anybody interested in just getting a sense of Swift and his role as Dean, the Friends of St. Patrick's Cathedral have just brought out a little book. It's by Albert Fenton. He's an avid historian. And at the end of this book, he refers to an outgoing Lord Lieutenant of Dublin, and presumably the government of the day were, you know, terrified of what this outspoken dean might say next. So that Lord Carteret, when he was leaving Dublin, and he, on one occasion, he'd said that 10,000 troops would be needed to arrest Swift, such was his popularity. But he was asked, Carteret was asked, what he felt his greatest achievement in Ireland had been. And he replied simply, "I pleased Dr. Swift." So there's a sense, you know, even at the highest echelons of government, people are a bit nervous, you know, what is this guy going to say? He's marking people's cars, great respect. And in a way, after he dies, then his legacy to this day, the legacy of justice, you know, continues. And many deans since Swift have been very outspoken and not afraid to, you know, say things that need to be said.
He was also welcoming of modern innovation and modern medicine and modernity. I mean, I believe there was his skull was found in two pieces. And tell us about that.
Well, he's independent. He's a he comes in as this great reformer, a good administrator. In a way, he's ahead of his time. He's a man of the Enlightenment. As many will know, he left a legacy for the foundation of St. Patrick's Hospital for people who were unwell mentally. I mean, it was unheard of to be so brave, really, in exploring new avenues. And likewise, he must have given instructions that his body could be used for medical research, because it was discovered when the cathedral floor was replaced in 1882, when his remains were uncovered, together with those of Stella, who's buried beside him. It was found that his skull was in two pieces, which would indicate that some kind of research had been permitted on his brain. So, you know, a man of his time, a man who contributed so much when he was alive, and he was forward-thinking enough, you know, to have given instructions that this could be done after his death. You know, in a way, there's a kind of a legacy message in that. He's not just contributing for his own lifetime, but he has a great sense of doing something for those who are going to follow.
Yeah, I mean, and that, I suppose, is something, you know, where as a character he seems to be something of a contradiction, in that people were clearly a little bit, you know, scared of him or nervous about what he might say, but at the same time there's this huge compassionate, very deeply spiritual core to him as well, in the sense that he always wanted to steer people in the right direction and do things that were good for society.
Well, and I mean, I think what the papers relating to St. Patrick's demonstrate is he's a reformer. He's tidying things up. He's keeping things in order. He's setting the house straight. You know, this whole memorabilia, the many collections of photographs and pamphlets and other things that we have as part of the archive. Particularly the photographs, you know, of the millennium celebrations and the giant Gulliver that was in front of St. Patrick's in 1988. What would he make of it? You know, I'm sure he would be very pleased that people are still remembering him, but also the things that he had to say.
And finally, maybe you could just give me some details of the website, or how people could find out more.
Well, first of all, if people want to learn more about the vast muniments of St. Patrick's Cathedral, look at the Church of Ireland website currently. Our archive of the month going forward, they'll be able to download the list and look at our online exhibition. The website of St. Patrick's Cathedral has all of the details of the festival that would run between the 23rd and 26th of November to mark the 350. There's a full calendar of events there on St. Patrick's Cathedral website. And finally, the book, the little book by Albert Fenton, Swift and His Cathedral, is available through the cathedral shop.